So Mr. Pitzer's gone this evening. Why don't we go ahead and get started with the pre-council meeting. Mr. Seawood, anything you want to add before you recognize Director Brown?
No, sir. I just want to introduce Director Brown. And she's Browning as she introduces our process for our proposed process for doing public engagement for this ARPA funds.
Good evening. Let me first of all introduce my staff who are going to do work on the presentation for you tonight. They are the brains behind all of this work, and so I think it's great to give them the opportunity to come and present their ideas to you. It's good professional growth and development too. So we have Rebecca Roslett back here. Rebecca's our senior public health planning supervisor. She is also the one that did our last MAP process, led that process. So lots of experience in public communications and engagement. We have Sarah Hum, who's our public information specialist, and we have Ashton Day, who is our senior planner. So just a couple thoughts before I turn this over to them. And we've got a lot of experience doing this kind of work, and we do a pretty good job at it, I think. This is a little bit different because normally when we do our community health assessments and our community health improvement plans, we don't come to the table with money. Usually there is no money. We're bringing people to the table to agree on how we're going to try to focus our efforts, often with the resources we have or with grants that we can get in the future. This one is different because ARPA comes to the table with a lot of money, and it also comes with some very specific requirements from the Treasury Department on how the money is accounted for, what it can be spent on. So, I think they've tried to factor that in. They've looked at what has gone on in a lot of other cities, how they are planning to use their dollars, how they're communicating with their communities. And they've made some calls to some of those cities as well. So what you're going to hear basically is a proposal from our own experience and how we've done our MAP processes before. And then there is a component of it that is a communication component, because we do think that ARPA is, we think a lot of people probably don't really understand how things can be used. I did a little neighborhood survey amongst my neighbors, and I found that they know actually very little about it, and they're all pretty highly educated consumers. So we've just sort of tried to build in, and we really are open to get your feedback, and we're going to start. Sarah, are you starting?
Yep.
Okay.
We like to stand, so we'll just stand up here for you.
Thank you.
So just as a reminder, as you all know, but there are certain eligible uses for ARPA that the money can be used for. So when thinking about what we're going to show you, we're also thinking about what it can actually be used for and making sure we're targeting folks that would provide input based on these categories. And then just as a reminder that you all obviously know, that $12.5 million, you all had already allocated some of that for homelessness, mental health, rapid access, community violence, and workforce development. So we have a proposed engagement plan, and we want to go heavy on the proposed because a lot of this really depends on what you all want. And this can be changed or edited. We have some things where we have two different options of if you would like to go this way, we can do this. If you'd like to go this way, we can do this. So everything you're about to hear is proposed. There's more information in the printed report that we had that has the blue and white cover on it. And again, as Stephanie said, these are all things based on things we've done before that have been successful. So that's really important too, that this is not the first time we've done these things, and so we know that they work. So first, our first goal is really to figure out what eligible use categories we want feedback on. So two options there. Either you all can decide that, or if you want community input on that, we do have an option that we think would work well for that. Doing both in-person and virtual, where the in-person would be kind of like a dot voting, where people could rank, here are the eligible uses, where would you like to see us gather more input? And then a similar virtual option so that people could participate at home. And then based on that, if we were to go with that option of gathering feedback, We would then create a report to present to you all what those findings were, and then you could decide from there, based on that community input, how you wanted to proceed. Or you could skip that step altogether, and you all could decide which eligible use categories you want additional feedback on. So from there, we recommend 10 total focus groups. So once those eligible use categories are decided of which ones you want feedback on additionally for with using focus groups, we would then be able to use those focus groups, 7 in person, 3 virtually. Those in-person ones would be pretty targeted. So for example, if we wanted to have economy as one of those focus group or one of those eligible use categories we want to focus on, we would then do a focus group to small business owners. So we really want to provide input for you that makes sense and that is actually helpful for what you need to have feedback on, because we want this, again, to be helpful to you. And of course, we would have things that we've done before, which being really thoughtful about where these focus groups are held. So depending on who that group is, of course, thinking about ADA accessibility, being on a bus route, different times of day, different kinds of options for folks to be able to participate. And we would keep that to about 10 to 15 participants each. And for those in-person focus groups, we would provide meals and childcare to make sure it's accessible for families and folks who we don't normally hear from, because that's who we want to hear from if those eligible use categories make sense for that group. And then also providing gift cards to thank them for their time. Additionally, we'd have 3 virtual focus groups where it'd be more open to the general public, so that they also had an opportunity to provide feedback. Again, also because of that, meals and childcare would not need to be provided, but we would still recommend using gift cards to thank them for their time.
Going along with a robust community engagement plan, we really envision a robust communication plan as well. As Stephanie mentioned, there's a lot of opportunity for education. I was actually talking to my dad, who is a Columbia resident, about this, and he thought I was talking about AARP. So there's a lot of clarification we need to do and really explain what ARPA is, what the funds mean to the individual, what the eligible uses are, and then, of course, how to participate in the community engagement process. If people don't really know what we're gathering feedback on, they're not going to give us that feedback. So our goal really is to rebuild the community while promoting transparency and accountability in order to reach the most impacted in our community. And we do that through communicating. So a part of the comprehensive communication approach involves a lot of different things, one of which would be a general awareness campaign delivered through multiple forms of media, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the other would be a detailed webpage as a one-stop shop for everything related to ARPA. This is similar to what Durham, North Carolina has done. Also, our own city has done this with COVID-19 vaccine to explain that information. We also see an opportunity to do a community e-newsletter with information delivered directly to those interested. Again, similar to COVID vaccine rollout, as well as the utilities. So we already have those mechanisms in place that we can replicate. There's also opportunity to use Be Heard Como on the Bang the Table platform, and of course, our valued partnerships with community leaders to reach those who either don't have regular internet access or just receive their information from those trusted leaders. So in terms of the general awareness campaign, due to the size and reach, we would recommend contracting that with an outside ad agency. I use the example of our recent COVID-19 vaccine campaign just to give you a better idea of really like the widest net we could cast. This can always be scaled down, and it can also be targeted to more specific audiences depending on our priority funding areas. We did work with Bucket Media on this campaign in 2021. That was because of the contract that the city has with them. It's possible to go with somebody else moving forward, but that would likely involve some sort of RFP process. So just to keep that in mind. As a refresher, the City Council did make a $200,000 investment in that campaign. That was multiple parts. There was a general awareness campaign. There were also different segmented parts of it to target specific populations, including the under 30-year-olds, African Americans, and rural. So a lot of possibilities. That also ran for 4 months, just to give you a better idea. So we saw a lot of awesome feedback from that campaign, a lot of reach. More than 200,000 clicks on Facebook, more than 4,000 clicks through Google Ads, and more than 5,000 swipe ups on Snapchat. We also did stuff with subscription services like Hulu for commercials, which got us nearly 200,000 views and into the homes of 30,000 community members across the county. So really wide reach with that. So we could do something similar with ARPA, which would just educate the most amount of people possible. So again, while this was the largest campaign we've done, the health department has done smaller campaigns ranging from 6,000 to 30,000, depending on the target group.
So based on all of those kind of recommendations and proposed things that we just heard, we did put together a proposed timeline. And again, that word proposed is used very strongly because it really depends on what you all want to do going forward and how that might alter what we have here. So this is based on what we just presented to you, but of course this can change. So thinking of those first steps, in April, hiring and onboarding two additional senior planners at the health department to actually be able to manage this process and execute the work. And then also starting that process of working with an agency to start those beginning conversations about our goals of that communications plan. However, some of those things would not come yet because some of that would depend on those eligible uses that are decided on to be able to target who we're trying to reach the best. And then in May, starting working with IT here at the city to create that one-stop shop webpage where everybody can go, get updates, get information, things like that. And then in June, launching that awareness campaign and launching the voting system, if that was a route that you all chose to go forward with, to be able to decide which eligible use categories you would like focus groups on. And then in July, we would come to you with that report, if that's the route you decide to go with that voting system. And then we could start, once those eligible use categories are decided on, then we can start the process of scheduling those focus groups, figuring out which questions we need to ask them to be able to gather the best input for you. Those focus groups then could be conducted in August and September. October, November, we would then analyze that focus group data and create a report to submit to you to really give you a breakdown of what we heard and what is information that is useful to you so that you can make decisions going forward. And then also we would share that information on that website. We would share information on that website all throughout the process to really make sure we're hitting that transparency goal and making sure people know what we're doing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So as far as the estimated timeline goes, one of the things, I know when you talked with the city manager in October and that desire to do something map-like was discussed, I think John made it pretty clear that was really contingent upon us having the resources to do that. And so we have put together what we believe will make that work, and that's two additional senior planners. If you want to go to the next slide. There's more of a detailed budget in here, but this is just a budget area. So that includes the salary, the staff, the things that you need to get people up and running in their jobs, like a computer and a phone. We've broken out costs for meals, gift cards, the like. And then, of course, on the bottom is a communications plan. That was based on, you know, what they talked about with our COVID vaccine communications plan. Could be scaled up, could be scaled back. You'll see it's about $284,000 if fully funded as envisioned. Next slide. One of the things I think also would be important, Matthew and I have talked about this, and you know, finance is going to have a heavy role in reporting to the Treasury and making sure that we have dotted our I's and crossed our T's and done all of those things. But I think that one of the roles that we can continue on in the department after the RFPs are submitted and the funds have been allocated is the ongoing evaluation processes. Because I would assume that council would not only want to disperse the money, but they would want to know that the money was going towards outcomes that you want to see. And so we would continue in that process as we went on. So anyway, feedback. I've got a couple questions for you. Okay, well, first, do you have questions for us?
Any questions for Director Brown?
So when you're talking about... Sorry?
Go ahead.
Excuse me. When you're talking about a media and a marketing plan, I know that we have a list of what we call the supplier diversity program. And I know from working and being invited to a meeting with the Columbia African American Business Association that was working with Mr. Witt before his passing, that there are several media-related firms there.
Uh-huh.
Can we ask you to choose one of them from working with Ready and the various groups over there that are working with African American businesses? Because what I've noticed long-term is that for most city council events, including this room, we are all white people, and except for Mr. Seawood, and we don't bring a lot of people of color into our conversations. I'm sorry.
They're back there going.
We're mostly white people. Mostly white people, and when we invite people in, we don't bring in a lot of people of color from the community, and they, in many instances, are the most impacted by some of the things that we do.
Right.
So that was my first question about making sure that that money goes to a Black-led organization so that we have representation in reaching out.
Well, we have all of our purchasing processes, so
yes.
I'm going to have to ask Kale, like, who's on those lists. And I mean, absolutely always happy to explore that. I will tell you that when we did our MAP processes before, we were very intentional in getting people in the room that did not look like us. And we did a really good job at it. But it takes a lot of groundwork to make that happen and to get people there and have it be where they're comfortable coming in an environment that they feel comfortable in. We don't make it heavy on city presence there because we don't want to be influencing it. We want it to be a very organic conversation and people build off of comments from each other. It's a fascinating process.
The other question I had is, and I can wait and ask another one because I have a list of questions. I do believe one of the reasons why, when I asked about whether or not we mandated the use of the supplier diversity program, I was informed that it's hard to break things down into small enough pieces for a small business. And if there ever was one that
would be a good one.
It was applicable to this, it would be
okay.
This particular effort. As far as I am absolutely on board with hiring two new senior planners, and they're sticking around and being part of the implementation process for whatever programming and services and contracts that we let with any of the ARPA dollars. But because we have not gotten underway with those four areas that we've already talked about, and we are unable at this point to make a decision how much money we need for each of those areas in order to affect change. I would suspect that a lot of what you're going to hear during this process will be surrounding those four topic things: homelessness, mental health, community violence, housing, workforce development, job training, and job availability, and all the things that wrap around that. So because of that, how is it that you incorporate that people are going to come to the table with those very urgent and significant concerns and be mindful that they may be sharing good information about how to implement whatever RFPs that we've already put out eventually and come back and we award contracts? How does that all fit together?
I can speak to that.
Thank
so
you.
So we would be very intentional. Casting a wide net is really on the front end, where you might have a business owner that's really invested in an area that's outside of economic development, and they really want to speak to something outside of their normal wheelhouse. That's really best managed by that community-wide survey opportunity, so we can hear from a wide cast of residents in our community what they value. When it gets down to the focus group area, those are very intentional in design. So the questions, if it is a focus group, I'll stick with the business one. If economic opportunity becomes one of the priorities that the community identifies, and we need to do a focus group to speak to small businesses, we are going to be working with the chamber and individuals to get small businesses to the room to talk about small businesses as it relates to economic opportunity. it would not be an open-ended question of how do you think city council should spend the ARPA funds? Mm-hmm. That would not be one of our questions. Mm-hmm. So the questions are very tailored to the reason why they're in the space. Two-way communication at that level is only fruitful if you have a very small scope. Typically, we do 3 questions for a focus group. That's about all the group can handle for fatigue purposes. And they're very much targeted towards what is it we want to know when this is over, what questions do we really want them to answer? So if it's something open-ended, that's better done at a wider level with a survey or even a community forum, something of that nature. That's not really well suited for the focus group environment. So if the topic is, I'll give you an example. When we did our last community health assessment, like Stephanie said, we were very intentional with how we planned those and how we recruited individuals to attend. We looked at the one that we did in 2013, and we saw where we had a lot of gaps. So this time, we did do one. We wanted to make sure that we were touching on persons experiencing homelessness. So we did one at Turning Point. We worked with Turning Point to get the individuals there that are most impacted by that issue, and we did one in their space where they were comfortable. They had food, they had everything. It was the same across all focus groups. But we would not come to that space and ask them about something that's not related to their lived experience, because that's what you're there to ask them. So it's unlikely in a focus group environment we would have somebody who's completely off track, because they would know that that was the purpose of this focus group. What we do always have an opportunity for, every focus group has an evaluation at the end. How did we do? What else do you want the city to know? Would you like to stay informed? So they would have an opportunity if they're like, well, my really great idea is on this other thing. They could share that, but it's not likely. If we do a good job recruiting, they're not likely to show up for something thinking it's something else. That's why the education and communication is so important. The other thing about ARPA that's very unique, when we did the city strategic planning focus groups, one of the questions was, if you have a friend who wants to move to Columbia, what would you tell them? Everybody in that room can answer that question one way or the other. With this in particular, as Ashton said, so many people don't even know what we're talking about, that we would really need to make sure our questions were well informed, so that we give them the information that they need to give you back the information you need. Does that answer your question?
It does.
It's a little long-winded.
No, that's okay. And so you're going to form the list of what those 10 focus group topics will be based on the input we give you?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that's where the landing page comes in as well. As this one-stop shop, we can put in details of what the work is that you all have already done, as well as education if anybody is interested in submitting RFPs for those priority groups you've already identified. So that can be a part of it as well while we're doing the work on the back end.
I want to make sure we have enough time for everyone to ask questions. Mr. Thomas and Mr. Scala.
Thanks, Brian. First of all, I really like the overall framework. I think the allocation of resources is appropriate for the magnitude, the importance of this work, to both gather that input from people who are impacted by the conditions that these funds are supposed to address, and also to let them know that the city cares and wants to hear from them, and that their opinion matters, which is going to help build, you know, much more, build a stronger community going forward and help, you know, heal divides that exist. So I think it's a really good process. I love the model of the focus group as a really effective way to do this. My question was, and you partly answered it, I think, you know, how are you going to decide on the 10 topics? And then how are you going to identify or recruit the focus group participants?
So it may not be 10 topics. Council could say, we really want to spend it on these 2 eligible uses. we budgeted for this is what the time and the cost of 10 would be. Mm-hmm. But that's changing. That's really up to you all. But if you have two priority use areas, we're going to do 5 and 5.
Okay.
So,
but within those, there could be
multiple
more specific
topics
within economic impacts, for example. There's a lot of different things in there.
Yes.
So are you going to work with partners? I heard you mention the 20 point from the CHA.
This is not an effective process if you do it by yourself.
Right.
So we, as part of our recruitment efforts, every focus group that we did during this last community health assessment and with the city strategic plan, when we knew that we wanted to hear from individuals impacted by a particular environment or, you know, those who have a shared experience, we work with the stakeholders who work with them daily to say, we want to do this focus group. What would be the best place for those that you serve? Where should we hold it? What's a good time? When we did what we really wanted to hear from seniors. So we did that at Oak Towers and worked with the resident advisor there on what's the best day of the month for this group, what's a good time, what would really help encourage them to come. We did one at Central Latino because we knew we had a gap there. So we have to be intentional with that, or I'm only going to hear from people that are my friends, and that's not the intent.
And I'm assuming you're going to think quite broadly about stakeholders for a particular topic, so that homelessness would include homeless individuals, organizations that are serving homeless people, and residents of neighborhoods that are impacted by homelessness, and maybe others.
You just defined a stakeholder. So it's anybody who either has an influence on something or is impacted by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
I think this is a very good process.
Yeah.
Mr. Scott.
You asked for some guidance and opinion, so let me start out with that broadly. I think it would be a mistake for the City Council to identify particular areas here before putting it out to the public to let them put their dots on the board for all of these categories. The ARPA funding guidelines include 5 categories: public health, economic impact, premium pay, investment, infrastructure, and government services. And we've kind of spoken with a majority consensus for the first tranche of the $12.5 million, and some of those are embedded even in the rest of these. But I would prefer to go the very broad route and let people decide, even if some of those things were addressed in the first tranche of money, to let them decide what's important to them. And you may be a little tired of me talking about this. I've mentioned it a couple of times, but in my experience, one of the most successful programs that we've ever had when it comes to outreach and getting focus groups that are represented by minorities of all colors and all stripes and emergent leadership was the business that we started when we had those underserved areas in this town. There were 3 of them, 1st Ward, 2nd Ward, and 3rd Ward. That were identified with GIS for all kinds of issues, and we also did have meals and daycare and all of those kinds of things talking about community policing at the time. That was a tremendously successful program, and unfortunately at some point, because the community wanted to move on to have community policing citywide, we pulled back on some of that thing, events. I think that was a mistake because crime in those areas, frankly, was reduced by about 20% or so. But it started off with certainly the communication first and letting the public decide what it is that they would like to focus on. And then making sense out of the focus groups and going to them rather than them coming here so that you can really identify that kind of emergent leadership. So I'm very supportive. I think we've done tremendous work here already, and we're just getting started with this. And I'm a little bit anxious, too, to do something a little bit more with even the first tranche of money, but it took 6 months for them even to explain what it is that we were supposed to spend the money on. We need to move forward with that. But I think this plan overall will satisfy the goal that most of us want to see, and that is using this money effectively after the folks understand what it is that's available and how it can help them. And I really do also believe that this, I think it's nonsense, other people may characterize it a different way, but it's not just about projects versus people. It's all about people, even the projects. are about the people. And I, you know, you can even go through this list of five categories here and talk about premium pay. Maybe that's the front line. Even bus drivers and police and fire, those kinds of things for ARPA funding. But let the folks decide what it is that they want to focus on, and then we can arrange for the rest of it.
Andrea?
I'm very supportive of all of this. I think the communications plan will be absolutely key in ensuring that we're getting informed quality data and not just opinions, really informing the work that we're doing. I support having an additional staff people over there as well. I agree with Carl. I think that we sort of had our opportunity to take a swipe at what categories we wanted to see based on the data that we had received previously. So I think having the community do a dot map or a dot graph and identify what their priorities are, I think is the next right thing to do.
Dr. Peters, anything you want to add?
Nope.
I just had a couple comments or questions as well. I agree. I don't think we should self-limit the eligible use categories the feds have laid out, what we can spend the money on, and I think we would be doing the public a disservice by self-limiting the qualitative, you know, approach to this. I would add a couple thoughts on that. Mr. Thomas mentioned stakeholders. You know, look, I can't help but notice the County of Boone logo here. You're the city county health department. The county has $36 million available. Is it worth having a conversation with them, either through you or through me and my counterpart there? Do they want to engage with us on this, knowing and maybe broaden this beyond just the city limits to also include the county, knowing that their responsibility for some of these economic impacts may fall there too, that dramatically expands the amount of money that's available here, and would they also benefit from the results of this? The second point is, in my conversations with the governor, there could very well be state matching funds available for some of these eligible use categories. Should that be a question in the focus groups? Would you still support this, or would you be more or less likely to support this if you knew that we could double the impact in the investment if we did these areas? So just
yes.
Two things I would point out there just to have an informed.
I would love if we could have that partnership with the county, and however we want to go about that happening, whether it's you reaching out or, I have monthly meetings with them as well. It's probably more effective if you two do it than me. But they are used to this process. Janet was on our steering committee for our MAP process, so she's very familiar. We did focus groups out in the rural areas as well. And actually, I would say there's a lot of little subtle differences.
There are differences.
Yeah. And I think that, I've seen as we've been looking at how different communities are handling their ARPA funds, I'm always intrigued by the ones that have built that really strong relationship with their county, where a city and a county are working closely together because they really are trying to figure out how to maximize resources for people. So,
I have a follow-up question. So are we to understand there hasn't been any conversation with the county?
Oh, I talked to them.
And but have you talked about the $35 million?
I've asked them if they knew how they were going to spend it or what their process was going to be, and they too were waiting on that final ARPA.
The rule that's coming out that's
sort of been that
effective
thing
now, but doesn't have to be effective for a little while. Okay. Because it seems that was a conversation that I don't mean it to sound critical, but it's sort of stunning to me that the county hasn't come to us or we haven't gone to the county and said, we overlap on a lot of these difficulties.
Right.
Including homelessness, mental health, community violence. A lot of this stuff happens in a gray area between the city and the county. So I hope that it picks up that conversation. As far as the mayor's discussions with the governor about matching, I'm uncomfortable with that when we don't have certainty about, because it's almost like stacking the deck to get people to be favorable to something because there might be matching funds attached to that. So that idea gives me a lot of heartburn, and I just wanted to suggest that perhaps that's not something to throw into a stakeholder conversation.
Mr. Thomas.
I appreciated the part of your report that you, where you said, you know, if the council wants to limit the, you know, the evaluation, the community engagement to certain parts, certain of those eligible uses, we should do that. And I came in here today planning to advocate that we just focus on the public health and economic impacts sections. And I still feel very strongly that that's where the funds should be spent. However, I'm not sure I'm opposed to doing the open process and including, you know, infrastructure and premium pay and lost revenue, although I'm not sure that we had very much lost revenue, if any, because I think that if the if that process is done, you know, authentically, then the majority of people are going to want the money to go to public health and economic impacts.
Ms. Peters?
I just wanted to comment that I have talked to Janet Thompson about the ARPA stuff. I haven't talked to the whole commission because I'm not sure that's my point or my job, but I did talk to her about the ARPA funding for some of the homeless needs here in Columbia. So we are having some conversations. It's not perhaps as formal as it ought to be if the mayor talks to them, but there is some conversation happening.
And what was her reaction to that?
Yeah, she thought it was reasonable. I mean, that, you know, these are not just city or county. I mean, our city folks are part of the county, so she was willing to look at that, and I thought she probably could speak for the rest of the commissioners informally. So
do we need to bring them together with us to have that conversation, Mr. Seawood, or what's the next right thing to do where the county's concerned?
Well, I mean, I meet with the county on a regular basis, so we can start that conversation and see if they want to do a joint meeting. I think once you start talking about projects, it makes sense to kind of come together. But at the present moment, with this process, if they want to engage in that, I think that would be an excellent process.
Yeah.
And it would help them actually formulate some of their thoughts mm-hmm. on how to move forward with this.
And get them moving.
Right.
Do you have what you need? Is there other stuff we need to do, or have we given you enough comments? Or
I think so. So what I'm hearing is that yes to the larger voting, however we call it, process. Okay.
So a two-step process.
Yes.
First of all, you'll use one approach to identify which of those categories are going to be considered.
Because there may be some categories that fall out. I wouldn't pretend to know exactly what it is that folks want, but it might sort itself out.
We would conduct that survey process and then create a report to bring to you to show you the results.
Right.
And then from those results, you know, you may have two or three that rise to the top, or you may have more than that rise to the top. So then from there, you all can make that decision based on that community feedback of which ones you want us to move forward with focus groups.
Ms. Wayne.
Several times in the presentation, it was mentioned that the media campaign can be scaled back or scaled up. Do you have the guidance that you need on the media campaign? Do you need that now, or is that later?
I mean, is the scope that we put up there, which is around $100,000, does that seem? Now, if we're going to talk to the county, there may be an opportunity
mm-hmm.
to shift that sum as well.
But I'm comfortable with that amount, but I wanted to make sure that we were all clear on the expectations and that scope.
And is that to drive people to the public input processes or the library or the health department or the ARC or?
So that will, the education campaign really needs to be the first thing we kick off, because we can't get fruitful input from a community survey if there isn't a basic understanding of what we're even talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be our first priority, would be to kick that off and start really doing a good job of making the community aware of the available funds and the eligible uses. And then also part of that would be, this is how you can get involved. You can take the survey. We have staff stationed at these public locations to help you with it there. So multiple areas for that. We would also have to rely very heavily on our community partners to disseminate this or to assist the community that they serve because a lot of survey takers are women. You know, there's demographic information on surveys that tells us who typically fills out a survey. And we want to make sure we're not just hearing from that lady who looks like me and loves surveys. It needs to be a very broad representation. So when we've done this in the past, we actually partnered with Friends of the Farm, the Clary Shy Project, because they needed to do a food assessment, and we did one big survey that met both of our needs, but then that greatly expanded our reach. But we were very intentional, and these are all the social services providers in the community. These are the businesses. This is everybody with a business license. We want them, we want to send this to them, make sure they're sharing it with their listservs, everything, so that people don't have to go and look for it necessarily. A lot of it's going to be driven to them.
I mean, we may even want to go back and at least reacquaint ourselves with the whole initial visioning process, which was even broader than this was, but eventually wound up to be the comprehensive plan. There was a lot of dots on boards at that time.
Yeah. You're going way back.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Griggs?
Ooh, that's better than on the screen.
Yes. No scrolling left to right.
Oh my.
Yeah.
So sad angle here. That might be easier to read.
Yeah. These printouts break your budget, by the way.
That's pretty nice. Just about, but we don't print much else, so it's good news. We rarely print, so when we do, though, we make sure they're workable. So I do like to introduce Gabe Huffington, our assistant director of Parks and Recreation, since he was largely the architect for this implementation plan. So we'll kind of go back and forth a little bit on this as we speak about the plan here. As you know, we passed a ballot issue back in November. You know, we can't thank the citizens enough for their support. At that time, we had a list of projects that was approved before the ballot issue. So after the passing of it, we basically comes up to about 30.9 million. We're about 3.1 million over the 10-year period. And so the next step is to do an implementation plan. So that's what we kind of talked about all through the process, that we would have these list of projects. If you vote for it, we'll come back with a schedule of projects. And so what we're doing tonight is kind of seeking your direction on this list of projects, because I know everybody's going to have one that they have in their ward they want to see next year or right away versus somebody else's ward. So, and we've already heard from some of you. Isn't that right, Dr. Peters?
Yeah, that'd be correct. You've heard from me.
All right, so I'll let Gabe talk about this since...
So when we started this process after the renewal of park sales tax, the one thing we wanted to make sure is we talked to our own staff. And so we had a work session with every staff member in the parks department, and we talked about what their priorities were. And so when we did a survey and we had them write down different reasons for every project, this was kind of their top 10. So 8 out of 10 of these projects are anywhere between 20 to 50 years old when we talk about these facilities. And so it really focused on, number one, improving the maintenance, cutting utility costs, and then for recreation staff, they programmed these facilities, they work in these facilities, so as to upgrade those different buildings or different parks, so as we continue to use those in the future, they'll be more of a like-new condition.
And finally, we have some projects on here that are actually older than I am, so that when I started the department, so. They're not projects I did and Gabe was designed to redo, so. All right, so some of the 5 impacts to this list is cash flow. We don't really, you know, borrow money on this. We don't bond it. We just, as the cash comes in, we do the project. So that way we can spend all the money instead of having some of it ate up in interest rates with the high dollar value that Matthew charges us at 1.2% or something. So. But we also plan for lower than anticipated revenues. You know, I'll never forget in 2010, we got caught short. You know, we didn't raise the ballot issue, didn't come in as predicted, and we were struggling at the end to get the projects done, as we promised, we wanted to make sure we never got caught in that position again. So we have a bulk of the acquisition funds or toward the end of the ballot issue to help do that. But we do have some. We did learn a little bit from the last one, so we do have some up front as well. We have more construction projects earlier because we know construction costs are skyrocketing. We don't want to wait to build the sports field house toward the end when a $5 million building may cost $7 or $8 million 5 years from now. So we definitely want to make sure we do that earlier. And then we also balance it with our work schedule. So we have a combination where our construction crews are working on projects, and then we have contractor projects the same year. So that way, we're never having three or four projects that we should do in-house in 1 year and nothing for contractors. So we want to kind of balance that out. And also with the grants, we want to make sure that we can apply for and have active one grant a year. So we want to make sure we balance. So like we get a recreational trails program grant, an RTP, in 1 year, that we're not having three trail projects in 1 year, so we can only apply for one of those. So we want to make sure we make them spread out each year so that we can apply for a grant for almost every project we have, whether it's RTP, Land and Water Conservation Fund, or any of the other numerous grants.
There's also some specific projects that we had to focus on in terms of the implementation schedule. Obviously, the construction of the sports field house was a council priority. With the additional funding that was allocated to that project, that moved that forward in the schedule, and so that's an FY 2023 project coming up. Whitegate Park development, this was another one that we obviously had heard from our community because the lack of park in that area, but also from City Council in terms of comments about needing to develop that park and to move that forward. Battle Park Phase 2, so we are currently working on our construction project in Phase 1, so instead of having a site that is partially completed, cleaned up, we kind of roll those together. We have one active construction project and we're able to get everything done. We also applied for a Land and Water Conservation Fund grant for this project. So we're hoping we roll all three of those items into kind of one project and we get everything done at that time. And then lastly, this happened as well in 2015 with the donation, the Frank Morris Trust. So Mr. Morris, when he passed away, he left a trust in place for biking in the city of Columbia. And so we were fortunate enough to work with that group and they have given us a $500,000 donation that will go towards the development of the Cosmo Bike Park. That's the quarry improvement project at Cosmo Park. Gans Creek Recreation Area improvements, part of that is a natural surface trail. And then also at Stevens Lake Park for the trailhead off Broadway. And so when that group made that donation, we will have an agreement that will come back to council with part of their stipulation was to make sure all three of those projects were done by 2025. The other part of this project that we looked at is when we start to develop trails and with everything that happened over the last couple of months with our trail projects, we've seen an increase in those and we've also kind of learned about trail projects. You'll see in places funding for what is easement acquisition, design, engineering, about 1 to 3 years ahead of every trail project. That way when we come to City Council, we can talk about here's our first step, which is the design and the easement acquisition for every trail. Then we move into the construction phase. So you kind of see all of those projects have a smaller dollar amount, and then every 1 to 3 years, then you'll see the construction costs. MKT bridge replacement is a priority because those are over 100 years old. We have to continue that process. We also applied for an RTP grant for that bridge project. We were successful to get one of those the last time in 2017 when we did that project. So we kind of roll that back in. On the Hinkson Creek Trail, Clark Lane to Vandiver, we are slowly learning that there's lots of discussion about an improved Highway 63 I-70 connector. When we've had discussions with MoDOT, they have told us to wait and wait and see how that design plays out because our trail will go directly underneath a portion of that. And so we're on hold a little bit in phase, what I call phase one of that project, but then in phase two as well as we continue to go north. We are waiting to see what that design is. Hopefully we work with them closely on it. We're able to put our trail into a place where they kind of already graded a little bit of that area out. And then the last is the Colt Railroad Trail. We anticipate that there will be extensive planning and public input in regards to this project. How we use that trip, the railroad corridor, how we work with Public Works to develop all of those street crossings, on grade crossings, if you think about Vandiver, for instance, that's the one we kind of go back to. We're going to have extensive input and planning for that project.
All right, guys, as we mentioned, planning out 10 years is tough. So what we said, we'll come back to council in 5 years in 2027 to review the plan so we can look at where our finances is, and so we can determine on what projects can we move forward, what projects can we, you know, do we keep it the same as we adopted, or do we want to look at maybe look at some of the increasing funding? Maybe we're not funding right. Maybe we've costs have gone up exponentially or something, and we need to increase a project to get it finished. And then, of course, we also had our priority two list of projects that council approved that we can pull it off. So, for example, if we're able to pass our use tax and we can generate another $350,000 or so a year for that, you know, then maybe we're looking at the second phase of the Hinkson Trail, you know, bringing that in from Oakland all the way, you know, all the way from Lang School to Albert Oakland and connecting, or something like that. We can pull in those projects like that. So that's kind of one of the issues that we'll look at in terms of about 5 years from now when we come back and speak to you guys. So at this point, we're open for any questions, or if you have any ideas or suggestions, let us know. You know, we'll return to council, you know, sometime in March, either the next meeting or the meeting after that, for resolution approving this plan.
Any questions for Director Briggs, Mr. Scout?
Let me try and start out with being diplomatic here. And everybody obviously has their own projects for their own ward, and I certainly was glad to see the Colt Railroad thing and the connectors on the north side, which affects both Andrea and my ward. But I'm also a little concerned about the land acquisition piece. And we talked about that sometime before. Some of these are kind of shunted down the list, and I completely understand that. But it's the land acquisition piece that can benefit the entire community, depending on where that is. And I would just like to put a little bit of emphasis. I can't lean on you too much. I mean, there's only so many things you could do. And I must admit, I was a little shook up when I first saw that some of the improvements that are my favorites were the very two last ones on this entire spreadsheet here. So I didn't know whether that was a priority thing or not, but it turns out it wasn't. But the land acquisition piece, I think, is very important. There was a good deal of support for it, and we were making up some ground because we lost some ground, literally, a few years back. Any comments on that?
Well, we are going to be coming back to council whenever the next, when's our next appropriation, Matthew? April?
Yes.
All right, because then our 2015 ballot issue ends the end of March. We'll have a really good idea where we're at park sales tax, even though we may not have the final numbers for another couple months after that. But by then, I anticipate we'll be able to fully fund our 2015 land acquisition, because the sales tax has definitely been coming in well enough to do that. So we are coming back to that. And so that could be the option too, that in 3 to 5 years from now, if we're what we're doing with use tax and all that, then maybe that's a way to fund the, you know, upload, bring up that earlier money too. But I think for us, some of the construction projects that we've kind of promised the voters are kind of critical too as well. So we honor the, it's a tough call.
Potentially good news, and I hope that does eventuate.
I hope so too, yes.
I had just to follow up on that. I mean, land doesn't get any cheaper, although you could argue that we're in a bit of a bubble right now. Maybe it does get more affordable. In a few years. Are you concerned at all about not having, or that the revenues aren't going to keep pace with the inflation of land costs for acquisition?
You know, we've been fortunate to work with, most of our acquisitions have been at below market rates, because I could sit with them and talk about their taxes and say that you're going to sell this to someone else and you're going to pay taxes, you're going to lose all that. You can make a partial donation and then sell it to us, and we can, you know, finalize those numbers, and we can make it very, very palatable to a lot of people at a lower rate, so it doesn't cost the taxpayers as much for that. And a lot of the developers, especially where Tim's group are real good about letting us know about developments when they come in with their concept plans, we work with them on setting aside some acres of land for neighborhood parks. But the problem would be the big chunks of land. You know, if somebody comes up with a 300 acre tract of land, and you know, and they're wanting $1,000 an acre or more, you know, those are ones that are, it would be tough, that we could just look at and see and work with Matthew and his financial genius on figuring out how to do it. So
okay, All right. Thanks. Any other questions?
I don't really have any question. I just have a comment. So thank you for putting that Whitegate park high on your list. I appreciate that.
One thing, since I Colin gave me 30 minutes, I knew we weren't going to take full 30 minutes, so I do have one quick discussion point I'd just like to get some direction on from you all. Is, as you know, we did a test site at Stevens Lake Park for our 4th of July fireworks.
Yes.
And I don't know what comments you've heard. You know, we've heard pros and cons. I got a call from Rick Shanker the next morning. I thought, oh no, here we go. But Rick goes, don't listen to anybody. I love it. I can watch it from my front porch. So it worked out well. But we've also had the negatives too. So, but what we're looking at is a spot that we could think do it. You know, we would go back to our old routine of the family. You know, the events would be at 6 to 9 with the fireworks start at 9:15, about a 25-minute show, long show. This is allows us to shoot the largest shells we can, a 6-inch shell, so we can go pretty big on that where people can see it from a long distance away. There's a traffic plan in place. We work with Roots and Blues and all the other events, Art in the Park and all that, so we have a traffic plan. We've worked with Amy's Special Event Committee already about how this would work. Chief Jones not here, but we work with CPD. They kind of like this spot because they're used to working it. It's got great event space. We got amphitheaters. We got the, you know, we have all the infrastructure for having that event. The fireworks guys set up the night before, so we have to have, it's a great security for us. We can, you know, close the park at night and let them stay there and have security. And then, of course, all these fireworks, the whole show is paid for by donors. You know, like Columbia Insurance Group has been a presenting sponsor. And so we've always had kind of a hospitality area for that. Rickman Pavilion provides that excellent spot for those donors. And so we'd like to, so it's a good spot for them to come in, and we can thank them for providing the funds to allow us to have this event. And so, as you can see on a larger map here, you can really see we, you know, you got great access for pedestrians and cyclists. You know, we can certainly provide that same kind of venue that the Roots and Blues has, feel to it. We would just shut down these trail locations just before the fireworks go off. But otherwise, it's a great spot for it. So before we get into a whole lot of planning, I don't want to have to come to you guys back in June and then have you say, oh no, I've had too many constituents complain. So,
Mr. Scott.
So far, I haven't had a lot of traffic talking about this, but I think it's an ideal site. I mean, in terms of the location being central to the city, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind everybody that it's the jewel of the Third Ward. I used to tease Barbara Hoppe about that because she played quite a role. But nonetheless, I think it's a great idea with all the amenities that we have available there.
So my suggestion of having fireworks in two different locations in town isn't flying.
Let's just say it has its logistics issues.
The challenges.
Yes.
I did hear from constituents, but they weren't really, they were more surprised that you guys were setting off fireworks because they didn't know about them.
Right.
But once they knew about them, they were pretty much okay.
Ms. Fallon.
So, I'm thinking of the neighborhoods north of East Walnut there who are patient with Roots and Blues. Some of them don't like it. They don't like the noise. And I'm wondering if, do you do, because you're the gateway agency for even Roots and Blues going to the park, what kind of interactions do you regularly have with the neighborhood associations north of East Walnut about what your plans are and how that impacts them?
Well, we don't have regular interaction with that neighborhood association because frankly, there's really all Roots and Blues and that's about it. You know, we really don't shut down their neighborhood. We don't really have anything that impacts that neighborhood too much, you know, other than, you know, this would be in another event, you know, this would be it. And so when you look at a calendar of 365 days to look at, you know, 3 days or 4 days of impact, to live next to a gorgeous park like this is a trade-off almost to me. You know, it's kind of like people complain on, they live on a cul-de-sac and Shane doesn't plow their cul-de-sac, but the rest of the year it's a great cul-de-sac, you know, because they don't have the traffic, they don't have all those issues. So
So.
So it's, but we will
yeah,
definitely meet with them. We will work with them on the passes. We will do something very similar to that. We allow them to have their meeting, you know, in the park. We don't charge them for that when they have their neighborhood stuff. So I imagine we would do the same kind of thing to work with them on that.
Just a comment on that. Historically, that East Wallen Neighborhood Association, I obviously hear about it every year, but I used to hear more about it early on and before some of the improvements and the move to Ritz and Blues and so on. I suspect that there will have to be the same kind of accommodation and discussion with those neighbors about, you know, what to expect, the type
absolutely
of building and all the rest of that
right
stuff. But that you're right. I think there is that idea that there is a trade-off. There is sometimes an issue with an event like this, but there is also the advantage of living right next to the park.
Yeah.
So I wasn't done. I did not. I've not paid attention to the concert schedule, but is the stage and the amphitheater utilized a lot in the summer with events that make noise, you know, music or?
Yeah, but it doesn't really impact that. You know, the way it's laid out,
uh-huh,
you know, the way we designed it is it does not, you know, because it's such a low point in the park,
uh-huh,
and then it goes up.
Yeah,
it doesn't really,
yeah,
it doesn't, it's, I've been out there and that was one of our first things. You know, we haven't had many concerts the last 2 years, obviously. You know, because some of the concert series were not operating during COVID, but we're looking to come back again. And anything we do will not be that noisy. It'll be more family friendly, local. I mean, they're going to be sitting up close to here. So,
all right, thank you,
Director Griggs. Where's that amorphous amphitheater that is like the best kept secret?
Upstairs.
So the thought about adding permanent seating to that, is that on this schedule or is that?
Yes, yes it is. There is a Stevens Lake Park project. It's FY 2028-29 right now that is the amphitheater kind of phase two, as we've been calling it.
Is that on this page?
Yep, it is.
Number
32, sir.
No. Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. It just says
playground.
And spray grounds replacement.
Okay. The funding amount also includes that. This was done before we added additional funding after the recommendation from council to look into the phase two of that amphitheater as a project.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't change the description. That's, I should have caught that.
Got it. I just think that's a great way, especially post-COVID. Jeff City's knocking it out of the park with 2,500, 3,500 person events.
Right.
With some great acts. So
I'll also add from a staff perspective, creating a home for 4th of July would be beneficial for everyone because over the past 3 to 4 years, we've bounced to different locations, which is a lot of work to recreate those plans, not just for Parks and Rec staff, but also CPD, CFD, when they have to also look at those plans and look at how we create these different models, whether we try to move back downtown or we shot at American Legion or Cosmo Bethel. So from a staff perspective, we can build a plan and then improve it every year, so to speak, as we go along with the same fireworks show.
Dr. Peters?
So I know I've asked this before, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the answer. We used to, years and years ago, have fireworks out at Cosmo Park,
mm-hmm,
in the northwest corner.
Yep.
And I think you told me you don't have good egress.
Right.
So is that the only problem?
Yeah. We really have two exits. You know, business loop to the stadium, business loop, you know, to I-70 interchange area,
yeah,
there. And it would be, yeah, we know what a bottleneck Show Me State Games is with, you know, and just regular soccer Saturday morning. So to have everybody, and this is an event where everybody leaves at once, it would be a nightmare getting out. CPD was not at all in favor of us going back to Cosmo. We did look at Cosmo Park.
And this is better because?
Because there's so many different ways. You know, we would, there's no cars. You're not going to have, you know, 1,500 cars parked in this area. So people are going to do like they do at Roots and Blues, where they bring in 20,000 people. We're all, you know, riding bikes or walking or getting dropped off. And that's what we would do here with the lake. That would be ADA parking and drop-off spot right here. So we would be looking at something similar to that, you know.
So people park their cars like downtown and then get a ride a bus or walk or?
or shuttle service or at Boone Hospital parking, for instance. They are really good to work with us on Art in the Park for that event. Folks park there and then they'll walk across.
Yeah, they don't allow Roots and Blues because alcohol sales. So.
Okay.
You really see people being in the park for 4th of July.
Yeah, we do. We think that, you know, all the seating areas where the kind of the blue areas are kind of the event areas, and then, you know, people could, you know, before, once we close this down, once about 9:15 we clear out this radius, you know, we anticipate people on the trail and everything watching it. I think it's that would be like the best spot to see it almost.
It looks okay to me. I guess we'll see how it works out.
Any other questions for Director Griggs? Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Closed session? Are we
no.
done really early?
Anything else? We have 49 minutes left.
Yeah, I just wanted to check on scheduling future pre-council work sessions. And there was one that we requested to do a much deeper dive into the Integrated Electric Resource Master Plan Task Force recommendations.
That's scheduled for...
Oh, it is scheduled?
Well, isn't it scheduled?
What is our scheduling for pre-council meetings? Maybe we should ask that question more generically.
The... The agenda for this one only mentions March 7th, topics to be determined, March 21st, fire, police fire pension update, and annual and greenhouse gas inventory report sustainability.
And Ms. Wehner, weren't you also going to have a trash pre-council meeting?
Yeah, and I think, DeCarlin, you had mentioned March...
We looked at March, and then Director Griggs is still trying to put together, not Griggs, Sorrell is still trying to put together some additional information, so it may push off into either April or May.
Excellent.
Yeah, I thought it should be after you were gone.
May I ask a question? When we get to that point, Mr. Seawood, can we put in some extra time on the trash?
Yes.
Yeah,
I would think it would take 2 hours.
We figured that would be a very long conversation.
Yeah, it would, by necessity.
Years long.
Carolyn, did you get as much feedback on the cancellation of the trash routes the last time around as I did?
Well, luckily we only missed one day.
Yeah, I know.
But I did see some comments on next door about the fact that somebody had to keep their trash an additional 7 days.
I spent about an hour and a half with a wonderful young lady that lives pretty close to me, but we discussed lots of issues, including that one, this afternoon.
Well,
did we get an answer?
Not yet.
Okay.
The Electric Resource Master Plan.
Carol. May 16th.
Well, I'm glad to know it's scheduled anyway.
And then the trash is in April. And did you say something about greenhouse gases? Is that what we're going
to
talk about?
To engage with local policy for a year.
Probably. Okay.
I know.
Well, what we'll do is we'll send out the list of all the scheduled pre-council meetings.
That'd be great. That would be good.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't have anything.
Anything else within the agenda? Ms. Wayne?
I mean, I do have a question that's related to our first topic. Since there was seeming consensus that we wanted to have community input on the acceptable use categories for ARPA, how does that impact your resolution, Pat?
Oh, I think we'll still have it heard next week.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it would be, if the two are in contradiction with one another.
I'm
going to
leave it on there. I'm not going to pull it, but thank you.
Of course.
Yeah, and I'm planning to vote for that resolution as well. I think, you know, each of us can make a personal statement about how we believe the funds should be spent, and I don't think that's in contradiction with the staff polling the public on those categories.
Got it.
But you're not asking to make a personal statement. You're asking to bind the council that 100% of it is going to go to these areas when we're asked.
I think that's what we would like.
Let's talk about the language of the resolution, but I am not going to pull it. It's going to stay on the agenda for the next council meeting. I don't think it helps us to argue about it.
Oh, and I wasn't suggesting to pull it. More than anything, I wanted to be clear on what we were able to do, if we were saying at that meeting that 100%, like whether we could still vote, if that passed and we voted yes, could we still then pursue what we've agreed on this evening? That was my question.
So we can have that conversation on March 7th with the public.
Got it.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
No. Enjoy your break.
Yeah.